Texas can sneak into number two. So, I want you all to, I can't ask you to pray for that because I really don't think God is all that interested in the football games. But you may want to watch. And if Oklahoma beats Texas Tech by a bunch, then I think there is a formula, which is way too complicated for me to figure out because no one really knows how the BCS works anyway. But then I was trying to figure out how USC could get into slot number two. And after 14 pages of formulas, I couldn't get there. I think everybody has to lose by 99 points. Some teams have to go on probation and get disqualified. But there is a way.
Prayer might help.
Prayer may actually help you, USC. So, just as well as just college football, it doesn't make a difference. But there are some important games coming up. Of course, South Africa plays England in rugby on Saturday. Big game. If you all go to the Irish pub in Huntington Beach, you can actually watch it early in the morning. Serve breakfast there. So it should be good. Okay. Dave did a terrific job in outlining. That's cool. I got competition. This is really good. So I better do a good job here. Thanks for doing that, Dave. Appreciate that. That was cool. Let's read that this morning we're moving to 1 Peter, the second half. And I think I pointed out to you previously, that... you know, 1 Peter looks a little bit like the Apostle Paul's type of epistles here. You know, you have the, you know, I guess the grace or the doctrine section up front here, and then you have more of the practical section back there. It was really important for the apostles that we understood God's grace, who He is and what He did for us, before we jumped into the practical Christian life. Hard for me, our generation, because we're all so existential. So we tend to want to jump in here quickly and give short shrift over here. But here in 1 Peter, from chapter 1:1 through chapter 2:10, is really grace and what God, who God is and what He has done for us. And then right here we have a therefore, how we should live. And this is divided up into three sections. This middle one had a little bit of application in it, but this one here told us about our great hope and inheritance that we have through the grace and mercy of God. This middle section reminded us that in light of God's grace and we being born again and Christ's death on the cross, we should live a certain way. And then this last section is just cool affirmation. You're God's chosen people. You're a royal priesthood. You're special people that God has chosen by His grace to be His people in the body of Christ. And just a reminder when we're going through difficulties, suffering, unfair circumstances, to remember we've been chosen by God in eternity past. Christ's death was planned in eternity past. And we've been beneficiaries of that in life down here on earth. But now we come to the practical section. And the first two verses of the practical section are sort of like Paul often does. Reminds me of Romans 12, 1 and 2. Remember Romans 12, 1 and 2? Yes. Yeah, you all remember that. I beseech you, therefore, it was actually in the Greek, it's therefore. Therefore, based on 11 chapters of grace, therefore, I beseech you, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, because that's your logical form of worship. And don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed through the renewing of your mind, and so on. Ephesians, he does exactly the same. He tells them, you know, therefore, because of what God's grace has done for you, I want you to live a life worthy of the gospel by being humble, gentle, patient, forbearing others in love. And Peter picks up the same thing. He's going to give us a summary and a little bit more. Okay, let's read the verses. The best way to do it is to turn your deal over, and you can follow along with me. The verses in my hen scratches. I could type them up, but that would be way too ordinary. So now, I want you to know it's better than getting it like this, which is my first version, in longhand with all kinds of red scratches on it. So what you have there is a better deal. Okay, so let's read this section, and then I'm going to focus on one or two pieces. Dear brothers and sisters, you are foreigners and aliens here. And that's a common theme here in 1 Peter, that, you know, we don't fit in this world. And if you don't fit in this world, that's right. We should be a little out of step in this world. Dear brothers and sisters, you foreigners and aliens here. So, and this is the therefore. In the Greek text, it's actually first. Therefore, so I warn you to keep away from evil desires, because they fight against your very souls. Be careful how you live among your unbelieving neighbors. Even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior, and they will believe and give honor to God when he comes to judge the world. And that's really a summary of what he's going to tell us in the next couple of chapters. As foreigners and strangers, as people who've been chosen by God, redeemed, given new lives, we're to keep away from evil desires. It's a battle out there. And we're to live in such a way that our lives are a testimony to those around us. And then he lays out some of the ways here. Look at verse 13. For the Lord's sake, accept all authority. The king as head of state and the officials he appointed. For the king has sent them to punish all who do wrong and to honor those who do right. It is God's will. I always pay attention when the Bible says it's God's will or something. It's God's will that your good lives should silence those who make foolish accusations against you. You're not slaves. You're free. But your freedom is not an exercise to do evil. You're free to live as God's slaves. Show respect for everyone. Love your Christian brothers. Fear God and show respect to the king. Then he moves on to slaves, which seem to have made up a significant part of the church. You who are slaves, but clearly, he's using slaves as an example of how all of us should behave. These attitudes are attitudes all of us should have, but he's focusing on slaves. You who are slaves must accept the authority of your masters. Do whatever they tell you to do, not only if they're kind and reasonable, but even if they're harsh. For God is pleased with you when, for the sake of your conscience, you patiently endure unfair treatment. Of course, you get no credit for being patient when you're beaten for doing wrong. I come under that verse more often than I like, I think. But if you suffer for doing right and are patient beneath the blows, God is pleased with you. I want that. 21. This suffering... Oh, hold on. Did I skip up? No. Yeah. 21. This suffering, unfairly, is all part of what God has called you to. Boy, I don't like that one either. God's called me to health, wealth, and prosperity. It's in there somewhere, isn't it? Gotta be. I hear it every Sunday on TV. And the guy doing it's got a gold watch. He must be. I've never heard them say, this suffering is part of what God's called you to. Sorry, let me just read that again. The suffering, unfairly, It's what God has called you to. And then he gives this unbelievable illustration that's just been blowing me away the last week as I'm thinking of it. Christ, who suffered for you, is your example. Follow in his steps. Then he spells it out. He never sinned, and he never deceived anyone. In other words, there's no basis for him to be punished or suffer. He did not retaliate when he was insulted. And when he suffered, he did not threaten to get even. And then this is the key verse of the whole passage. He left his case in the hands of God, who always judges fairly. Ooh, that takes a measure of faith that's above my pay grade in certain times. He left his case in the hands of God, who always judges fairly. He personally, and then he gives, but in suffering unfairly, he accomplished something really great. He personally carried away our sins in his own body on the cross. So we can be dead to sin and live for what is right. You've been healed by his wounds. Clearly he's quoting Isaiah 53 here. Once you were wandering like lost sheep, and then you didn't understand unfair treatment or any of this suffering stuff. But now, something's happened. He's just told them in this previous section, but now you're a chosen people. You're God's people, saying the same thing in different words now. But now you've turned to your shepherd and the guardian of your souls, and therefore you have to be different. Okay. Since I spend all this time working on this PowerPoint, I better do it. So, okay. Remember 1 Peter here in the general outline? Okay. Phil has made it has made it fancy, but it'll take me forever to get through here. 64 AD, written by the Apostle Peter from Rome. He's writing to these churches in what's today northern Turkey. It appears that the Apostle Paul has recently died, probably in prison, in his second imprisonment in Rome. Peter, sort of as the kind of leader of the church, in a sense, was writing this general epistle to the churches that had been founded by Paul and his apostles. At least that's what it seems to be. We don't know that for absolute certain. That seems to be the way it is. And he's writing to mostly Gentile churches in northern Turkey. Paul had just died. The Christians are under persecution. It doesn't seem like a state-organized persecution yet, but it's a real persecution starting to mount. They're being disenfranchised, discriminated against, and socially ostracized. And Paul's encouraging them to persevere in their sufferings by assuring them that glory will follow. Okay. Then, Okay, this is the big outline here that I can show you. We've done this first section. We're chosen by God for full and final salvation, God's gift of salvation, the calling, and then last week, God's choice as a special people. Now we move into this practical thing, and the big theme here is honorable behavior in the midst of suffering. How do you behave when you're being unfairly persecuted, discriminated against, and treated? That's the key to 1 Peter. And our first little section here is submission to the appropriate legal authorities. And here we have submit to the appropriate legal authorities. And yeah, you can see all that stuff. Okay. All right. Let's look at these first verses here. If you want to have a look at them, this is really something here. Yeah. Those of you who saw and heard me teach back 10 years ago, I'm actually technically savvy now. All relative, you know. How it goes. Okay, let's look at this. This is the key verse here. Dear brothers and sisters, you're foreigners and aliens here. I think we need to always remember that. We're not supposed to fit in down here. Our belief system, our value system should be different from the world around us. It shouldn't surprise us. You know, those of you who've traveled abroad know how difficult it is, you know, when you go to a foreign country to try and communicate to people. And he's trying to pick up this image. He's not saying they're foreigners and aliens in a political way. He's just saying as believers, part of this new family of God, this chosen people, you're different. You're going to be out of step. It's going to be a little bit of a hostile environment. And, you know, you just need to understand that. I went to the Ukraine once. When we were in Virginia, we started this little church, and because I was the pastor for free and we got the facility for free, I wanted the people to learn how to give. So I was trying to find a place where we could give to with foreign missions. So I went over to the Ukraine to hook up with a Bible college there and some churches that our little church could help support, which we did. So, but what happened is that the plane got held up in New Jersey. It was flying to Warsaw and then to Kiev. And so I called everyone, and I was told I'd have to spend the night in Warsaw. And so I called, and whoever was going to meet me at the airport in Kiev was told not to meet me till tomorrow morning. We get to Warsaw, they say, oh, cool, we've got a plane to get you to Kiev tonight. But hurry, it's leaving. So all right, I arrive at Kiev. And no one's there to meet me. It's like 10:30 at night. I can't speak Russian, which is what they speak primarily there. And I'm totally stuck. And I didn't have, because someone was supposed to meet me, I didn't have a phone number or didn't have a place to go. So finally, you know, these taxi guys come up to you. And I, you know, through sign language and stuff, I had an address, which I thought was made, because I was going to stay at the Bible College. I thought it was an address there at the Bible College because I didn't know. And so I gave, and that was my last hope. I pulled out this address. I didn't know where to go. So the guy takes me in a taxi, can't speak to him, and he finally takes me to his place, and it's downtown. It's their kind of office headquarters. And it's 11 o'clock at night. Nobody answers the door. But someone there tells them, maybe somewhere else. So as we get in the car, we are driving, and I said, well, you know, can you take me here? And he says, problem. I said, what problem? Grivna, which is money. Grivna. Oh, okay. How much grivna? And 100 more. So, grivna. So we went to 4 stops. Every time we had a problem, grivna. Grivna. Finally, we managed, and went to a hotel, but the hotel was full. So for about 4 hours, from about 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock, I'm driving around Kiev here with a taxi driver who can't speak language. And he's ripping me off, and I know it, but I don't know what I can do about it. Grivna. I later found out he got a month's wages in that one trip. Finally, we get to the Bible College. But you feel a little out of pocket when things like that are happening. You can't understand the language. You can't understand what's going on. And you feel you're out of pocket. And sometimes we should feel a bit more like that. The values of this world are really not our values. You know, some of them intersect at certain places. But we really have a value system where we value our relationship with God through faith in Christ more than anything. We value integrity, morality, relationships with people, serving others, humility, patience, long-suffering. Those are the character qualities that we value. In my world of law, that is not character qualities that are normally shown to be all that great. And even on the sports field, it seems to me like some of the quality. You know, I love sport. But every now and again, I get disgusted with it. It's just a blinking game. At the end of the day, we pay these guys millions of dollars for throwing and catching a ball, and they behave like a bunch of galoots. I mean, even the University of Texas guys. And the other thing is, University of Texas fans, you know, we're as bad as USC fans. We are lousy losers. And we're actually worse winners. I mean, okay, it's just a game. Played by a bunch of 19-year-olds who are supposed to be at college to have fun and kind of get a degree and stuff like that. So foreigners and strangers there. We're supposed to be. All right. So, and this is the key, therefore, I warn you to keep away from evil desires because they fight against your souls. The Christian life's a battle. Galatians 5 tells us the spirit wars against the flesh and the flesh against the spirit. If you're a red-blooded American or African or wherever you are, there's a constant war going on within us, the spirit against the flesh. And I've been a Christian since I was 14, just before I turned 15, and that battle does not seem to go away. You're a little more successful at times, a little less successful at times, but there's a constant battle going on. 1 Peter chapter 5 is going to tell us that the devil goes around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. The devil wakes up every morning thinking, how can I screw up Brian Christie's life? How can I attack his marriage, his morals, and his ministry? And he does the same for every one of you. And he's got all these demons that are doing that. And then the worst part of it, my sin nature wants to cooperate with him. Because I have inside of me the sin nature that wants to do wrong. It wants to be selfish. It wants to be me first. It wants to cut corners. It wants to retaliate. It wants to get even. I'm from Africa. You Americans are more sophisticated and stuff like that. But we have that. So we got the devil, our sin nature, and then the world encourages it. Who's our hero? John Wayne. What did he say? Don't get mad, get even. Oh, I want to get even, especially when I'm unfair. What do we all say? What's that great biblical verse we all quote when things go bad? What goes around comes around. That is, God's going to get that guy. But somehow that's got into evangelical language here. So we have this battle, and it happens every single day. Pride, ego, you know, you guys know it. It happens every single day. It happens in the sexual area, particularly in our culture for some reason. But right now, the real battle is in the financial area. We're all under huge financial pressure. The temptation to not be fully honest, the temptation to not do our income tax returns quite the way, because after all, do you know how they're going to spend our blinking money? They're going to bail out that guy down the road who took out a second lien on his house, and he bought Mercedes for mom and pop, and he went to Hawaii, and they're going to bail him out with my money. I had a partner once who used to tell me, Brian, he was a Christian. I always tell the truth. I never lie. But when it comes to the IRS, it's war. And all is fair in war. They're deceitful. You got to be deceitful. You read the verses that we said. But my sin nature says, yeah. And now we're about to have a government in Washington that some of us don't necessarily agree with. You know, well, we don't agree with it. We shouldn't pay taxes, should we? If they're not going to be responsible with our money, should we pay taxes? Then, of course, I'm confronted with Jesus. Render unto Caesar what belongs to Caesar. And you know, Caesar didn't have tax policies that I really appreciated. He taxed with no representation. And yet Jesus still said, you've got to pay your taxes to Caesar. He didn't say, if you agree with his policies. Sorry.
Seemed funny at the time.
Temptation now, finances. Cut corners. Not be honest in our taxes. Retaliate. All of us are going through some unfair things happening now in the financial world. We signed guarantees way back. We got capital calls coming down the road. We got things happening. People are not paying our bills, that the banks who committed to us are not following through. We're going through difficult things. Easy to retaliate, easy to get mad, easy to cut corners, easy to fudge a bit. This is the battle that's going on at the moment in all of our hearts, and we have to figure out how to do it. And nothing is going to be worse than to have Christians show up who cheated on their tax returns. That's awful. I once had another partner who was one of the senior partners, and he's a CPA in this company I was in. And you know, he talked like he was a Christian, and we found. And then what he did is he submitted one income tax return to the government, and then he gave us a different one to give to the lenders for the loans. The one we gave to the lenders for the loans had a lot higher adjusted gross income than the one he gave to the taxes. And what happened? There was an audit. And somehow, I was in a meeting where I think there's an IRS guy came in and said, here's a tax return you gave to B of A or whoever, and here's the tax return he filed. Uh-oh. The other partners didn't really like him. They kicked him out within 24 hours. And we took the company public about 3 years later, and he missed out on $20 million because he lied on his income tax return. Be careful. Financial returns. I mean, financial statements. You know, I know in the heydays, filling out financial statements is an art, not a science. How many times have we heard that? Yeah, this building, yeah. How much should it be worth? You know, in the heydays, the appraiser would always call you up and say, now, what's the purchase price? I was about to say, you shouldn't need the purchase price. Tell us what it's worth. And somehow he found out the purchase price, and lo and behold, the property was worth just $100,000 more than the purchase price, just the right number. And we kept on employing him, the bank kept using him, and everyone was funny. We're faced with tremendous things now. The other side of it is this, which kind of works together. Be careful how you live among your unbelieving neighbors. Remember that song we used to sing? Your actions speak so loud that the world can't hear what you're saying. Right now is a huge opportunity for us as believers to do the right thing, to do that which the world would never think of doing because we're citizens of a different world. We're going to do things that are just defining moments of honesty and integrity in this financial situation. Because it says, even if they accuse you of doing wrong, what are they going to do? They will see your honorable behavior above and beyond, going the second mile, additional integrity, and what will they do? They will believe, they'll honor God when he comes to, our translation says judge, the Greek word is visit, it may be judge or it may be to come in salvation, but when Christ comes again. Our actions speak so loud the world can't hear what we're saying, especially in this area of finances. Back when we lived in Texas, I had a, my wife's family took in a young boy whose name was Wayne from Trinidad. Wayne's mother had gone to Prairie Bible Institute, and Wayne, and no one really knew who Wayne's dad was, and Wayne had come over, and he stayed with Tina's family for about 4 or 5 years. He was there when we got married, maybe even 6 or 7 years. And they sort of raised him, and then he went back to live with his mother when she finished Bible college and so on. So Wayne was sort of this funny kind of a relative that I knew and didn't know very well. We hadn't heard from Wayne for 10 years. And I'm in Texas, and I get a call from Wayne. Wade, hi, Uncle Brian. He'd call me Uncle. Hi, Uncle Brian. This is Wayne. Yeah, I'm up in Canada here. Just north of Edmonton. I want to get in a new business. I want to. I need to buy an 18-wheeler, and I've got half the money saved up. And if I do it, I can pay you back in 90 days because of everything that's going on. And it wasn't a lot of money. It was a lot of money. It wasn't a lot of money back then. I don't know, 10,000, 15,000, something like that. And he says, but I have to have it tomorrow. So, okay. And, you know, you got to be generous. You know, give to him who asks of you. You know, that's what you do. They're family. So I called Tina. I said, honey, what should we do? She said, well, you know. Well. So anyway, long story short. So I said, well, Wayne, where do I send it? Oh, wire it to my girlfriend's account in Edmonton. Okay. I think I'd get Edmonton. Well, I'd committed by this time. So this is a funny story. I got to I represented the bank in town there. I got to the bank and I said, I'm going to wire some money. Okay. I got a real straight-laced conservative Central Texas banker that I represent, and he thought I was straight-laced and conservative. I got to wire this money out. It's got to go out early tomorrow morning. Okay, how much? Okay. And then he said, now, where are we wiring it? Oh, to his girlfriend's account in Edmonton. Do you know this girlfriend? No, but anyway, long story short, we send the money off there. And, of course, 90 days go by, I get a call from where? Uncle Brian, you won't believe it. The Canadian dollar has just weakened, and I can't make any money, and I can't pay you back. Okay, but you know, I'll try and do something. Then about once a year, Wayne would call me and explain to me how hard life was and why he couldn't pay me. And I have a long history of this, as most of you do too. My dad was enormously generous, and somehow I inherited that, so I usually lose on this program. But then, lo and behold, great story. Now, Wayne was the one in the family, we weren't sure how strong his faith was. He was the one that was sort of out there. I don't think Wayne has ever taught a Sunday school class. I don't think Wayne has ever taught a Bible study. I don't think Wayne has ever been up front as a strong kind of believer. But about 5 years later, I'm in South Africa. Wayne calls up my paralegal, Lynn, and says, I've got the money. And he said, I've calculated, and there was no promissory note, there was no nothing, it was a verbal. He said, I've calculated the interest, and I'm going to wire the money to Brian today. Give me wiring instructions. And he wired the whole money to me. I had told him 2 or 3 years earlier, Wayne, don't worry about it, it's gone, we're family. Isn't that cool? He didn't have to do it. He never knew I've only seen Wayne once since then at a family reunion we had about 8 years ago. At that family reunion, his girlfriend, who's now his wife, told me, he said, Wayne would not go on holiday, on a vacation. He'd not buy anything he didn't need for his business until he paid you back. Incredible story. And Wayne is somebody you and I would have sought as kind of on the C team as far as Christianity goes. He's probably sang in the key of G or H like me. So he wasn't really good in worship. He didn't teach Bible studies, didn't do anything. But he had this integrity. His actions spoke so loud. He didn't need to testify. That's something. He didn't have to do it. I gave him a wide open door to not do it. We didn't need the money. In fact, if I had actually been in the office when he did it, I would have certainly told him not pay the interest, just send principal. I would have probably talked him out of it. But he wanted to do it. Integrity. Our actions speak so loud that the world can't hear what we are saying. Okay. We're under pressure right now. All of us. It's a battle. And some of us, you know how disappointed you've been when a believer shows up and he's done something that just embarrasses us all. I think of Ken Lay. You know, Ken Lay was very prominent in his mega church in the city of Houston. I believed in him because I wanted to. He's very very philanthropic and all those kinds of things. And he gets convicted across the board on all those criminal charges with Enron. It was very hard. It just hurt the church there significantly. And, you know, when you look at the things, he didn't go very far overboard. Circumstances were very difficult. When I was in I tell these Texas stories because this never happens in California. I taught a Bible study in Texas, a lunchtime walk through the Bible, evangelistic Bible study at a hangar. I had a friend of mine who had a business selling planes and helicopters, and we had a little ministry of bringing business guys in, and I would teach this Bible study. And we had probably, I don't know, maybe 100 guys would arrive. Three of them were presidents of savings and loans. This is about 87, 86, 87. And back then, savings and loans were coining money. You know, they took in these deposits at 12% and hoped like heck they can invest the money and make more as joint venture partners of developers. And eventually the pyramid scheme collapsed. Two of those three SNL guys ended up being indicted. They were Christian guys. They were absolutely Christian guys. I know them. I've been to their homes. They ended up getting indicted, and the third one got investigated but was never indicted. And they just crossed the line in small places. At the time when things are moving so fast, it just seems expedient to do it. There's all kinds of rationale. But two or three years later, and one of the SNLs actually represented us, so I had to go and give some testimony to the FBI. It can happen. And two of them crossed the line. These are good guys, strong believers. And yet they just crossed the line. And it just embarrassed them and the body of Christ. Another guy in the savings and loan, and I say that because there's a lot similar to what's going on now. This is in 88, 89, and 90. Another guy is the owner of one of the SNLs. Strong Christian guy, outspoken Christian guy. His son was going to Southwestern Baptist Seminary, and I was the lawyer for the savings and loan. And what was happening back then, as you can imagine, they were trying to get all these bad assets off their books because they thought they were going to be taken over by RTC, which they did get taken over. And we would have these guys rise out the swamps and appear at our SNL with a guarantee that with a financial statement that we never checked, and bought these properties with a new loan that came from the SNL. So now you had a performing loan with someone guaranteeing it who looked like he came out of the swamps. And I remember I went to the vice president of the SNL. They were in my office, were closing a deal there. In Texas, you do office closing, you know, where everybody shows up. And I went to the vice president, I said, "Jimmy, this doesn't seem to be right. Somebody's got to be getting a kickback here. This does not make sense," because there was a broker who was bringing these guys, and then the owner always seemed to show up for the closings. And we paid this broker a huge amount of money because, you know, we were selling, you know, $25 million pieces of property, 50, you know, large pieces of property to the guy. And Jimmy said no. So then Jimmy went in the back room with the owner and they had a 30-minute conversation. He came and said, "Brian, he has promised me, because, yeah, I'm afraid that my law license is on the line some year. Yeah, I'm closing all these things." He says, "He's promised me there's nothing wrong." I said, "Well, you write me a memo to the file on that thing." Turns out this guy was getting 70% of what the broker was getting. Owner of the SNL, a strong Christian. He and I would talk about spiritual things. It can happen. It's a battle. Every single... Okay, sorry. Okay. Am I preaching, Langford? Okay. I'm not a preacher. I'm just a lawyer. But you just got to be really careful, man. Okay, I'm going to zip through the rest of this because I have one other thing to say, and then we'll be there. Okay. For the Lord's sake, you've got to pay your taxes. For the Lord's sake, we've got to follow governments that we don't always approve of. And remember, when Peter was writing this, you know, you had some pretty bad emperors who were about getting ready to persecute Christians. And the government officials were pretty much all on the take. There's a lot of bribery and corruption going on, but still we had to do that. But I want to get to this last verse here, where it talks about slaves here. Okay, because this is what I really wanted to do. All right. Okay, this is the one I really wanted to talk about here. And I'm going to take 2 minutes and then I'm out of here. Okay. This suffering is part of what God has called you to. I've got to remind myself about that. I think it's unusual. At bottom, I'm a prosperity gospel guy. Somewhere deep down in my sin nature, there's a sense that God, after all I've done for you, I should be healthy, wealthy, and wise. And my kids should be beautiful, handsome, make all the varsity teams because of what I've done. And suffering is what we expect in this world, because heaven, this is not heaven. Heaven's different. Place. Okay. Christ suffered for you by example. Follow his steps. He never sinned. He didn't deceive everyone. I can't even come close to that standard. But sometimes I think it's unfair. And what did he do? He did not retaliate when he was insulted. I want to retaliate. Every bone in my body wants to retaliate. When he suffered, he didn't threaten to get even. What goes around comes around. Just something in there that we want to get even with other people. Really, inside of all of us is this desire to retaliate, to see someone else comes down. And then this is a key verse. What did he do instead? He left his case in God's hands, who judges fully. I've got to learn to do that. I got to learn to have it. Now, that doesn't mean you can't use appropriate legal procedures. I mean, the Apostle Paul appealed to Caesar when he was in Caesarea. The Apostle Paul also, when he was in prison at Philippi, said, "You can't beat us. We're Roman citizens. You've got to abide by the law." So there's an appropriate place to appeal to the law. But at the end of the day, it's in God's hands. And all of us who have a strong God allowed everything to happen that happened in our lives. More likely, he preordained everything that happened in our lives. So really, the one we're mad at is God. So we have to leave it in God's hands. And I think I've told you this, and this is my amateur. I could be wrong. I may not be right, but depression, which a lot of people go through when finances don't go well, depression is really anger that is stuffed down, angry with the circumstances, angry with the people in your life, and you push it down. If you can have a healthy view of the sovereignty of God, God at least allowed, perhaps foreordained, all these unfair things that are happening. He's called me to suffer, and therefore I do it gladly. I think that's a great relief for depression, because then we can't be angry at God, because he loves us. He saved us, and he's promised us a home in heaven. Okay, why don't you skip to question number 2, and the thing, are the questions in your, are the discussion questions in the handout there? Are they there?
Yeah.
Okay. I think I beat taxes to death. So go to number 2. Go to number 2 and talk about how we respond when we are suffering unfairly. Because, you know, some of this financial pressure and burden we're bearing seems totally unfair. We get beat up on by the bank and the guy down the road seems to skate by. We lose our job and the guy down the road who's doing half as good a job as us keeps his job. You know, the lender who's lined up to to finance our deal bailed, but the lender who's going to finance the guy down the road who's an atheist, his loan comes through. So we all think there's a lot of unfairness going on at the moment. So why don't you talk about how do we respond when things are happening to us that seem to be unfair? Okay, you got 15 minutes. Grab a table or pull some chairs up or do something where you can be a part of this. Get more coffee if you have to.